Preston and Steve Fun Size Podcast.
Steven, I didn't realize earlier this morning I mentioned the movie RKO 281 about Citizen Kane.
Right.
The character played by John Malkovich was Josh's grandfather.
What?
He co-wrote Citizen Kane.
Malkovich, yes, of course.
That was his grandfather.
I don't know why I didn't put two and two together.
I saw it at the last second. Wow.
I should naturally assume that everyone I meet is in some way connected to Citizen Kane.
Yes, which maybe Chris Hardwick is.
I'm sure
he is. I don't know, but...
He definitely is.
He definitely is?
He married into the family.
The Hearst family.
Oh, my God.
and Kane is... Ah! Of course.
I can't take it. Well, Walking Dead Season 10, the finale, the final season, Sunday, 9 o'clock. Please welcome Chris Hardwick to the show. Hey, Chris.
You guys, it's all cosmically connected.
It was meant to be. Wow.
Do you know Josh Mankiewicz?
You know, I don't, but it was funny because as I was hearing you say that, I heard... You know, RKO, I heard Citizen Kane. I was like, I wonder if they know.
Yeah, of course, yes.
I didn't even realize it. Well, listen.
I always like to make fun of that movie just as a joke. And by the way, my wife doesn't. Sometimes people are like, oh, my God, is she weird about that movie because of her great-grandfather? I go, no, it's, you know, like we've made jokes. Like, you know, when people bring it up, I'll go, oh, you mean that crappy movie made by that hack director?
You know what? It's got...
Who took shots at a nice guy who's just trying to live his life.
A simple businessman just trying to get ahead.
Right?
If you're going to be attached to a movie, probably the greatest film of all time is not too shabby. So there you go. I wanted to ask you just before we get into Walking Dead and all that stuff concerning your lovely wife. I follow you on Instagram, and she's clearly into the nerd stuff, or appears to be. Is she, in fact, you know, can she go neck and neck with you as far as your adoration for all things pop culture and this stuff?
I mean, yeah, and definitely horror.
Okay,
she is a horror fanatic. And she is, you know, we're both, and in these last, particularly these last 7 months, have been, you know, pretty much tied to our Nintendo Switches. And so, but yeah, the thing about Lydia that I think people wouldn't really know about her is that she's basically Wednesday Addams. Like she's
that's awesome.
Basically, she's like, she has the soul of a goth girl. And even in the sense that a lot of times I'm convinced she might be a vampire because it's like 100 degrees outside and we have to go, when we walk our dog, it's like black jeans, long sleeve, black shirts. And I'm like, what are you doing? You know, and she's like, I can't be exposed to the sun.
I dig that. I dig that. Yeah. My wife was very, when I first started dating, she had this, an old sort of goth vibe about her. And that just works. And we see eye to eye, my wife and I, on a lot of stuff. But there are a few things that she just cannot get into. Is there one clear-cut thing that you guys cannot agree on in this genre?
In horror? No, we're pretty, like, our interests are pretty aligned. And even to the extent that we both collect, like, movie memorabilia, like, you know, from, like, auctions and things. And I have some pretty cool pieces from... I have Rick Moranis' Spaceballs helmet from the movie.
Oh, are you kidding?
You're kidding me. You actually have Lord Helmet's helmet?
I have Dark Helmet. Yeah, I have it.
Or Dark Helmet, sorry.
And I got Rick Moranis and Mel Brooks to sign it. So
God.
Sort of like it's sort of like the crown jewel of my you know, like my movie memorabilia collection, but Lydia collects all the horror movie props. So there, she has original Gremlins and stuff from Army of Darkness, which is her favorite movie. And,
wow.
And all these different horror movies. And when people come over, well, when that was a thing, when people could come to your house, they would say, oh, your wife lets you keep all your nerd stuff out. I'm like, it's hers. Like, it's not mine. You know, it's like all the horror stuff. So it's pretty real.
That's spectacular because my wife is into a lot of stuff. She does not collect. I wish she collected because I would feel less horrific about what I saddle her with at home. But it is a wonderful thing. But with
Can I just jump in before we go to Walking Dead?
Yeah.
Because I have to say, one of the things that I think is, you know, like as a couple that we're really lucky about is we have pretty much the exact same taste.
Yeah.
And I know that there are a lot of people like, I think Guillermo del Toro has a whole separate house for all of his nerd stuff.
It's awesome.
And, and so it's just really nice. And I never thought I would be the person in the relationship that every once in a while said, hey, we got to calm down on acquiring, you know, like,
yes,
I actually said this out loud to my wife once. I said, like, she ordered some like alien prop that she got from this special effects convention, this makeup convention that is in Los Angeles sometimes called Monsterpalooza.
Yeah.
This alien show, this the horror prop showed up. And I actually said sincerely, sweetheart, If you don't stop buying horror movie props, there's not going to be enough room for our vintage taxidermy. Which was such a weird sentence.
I guarantee you, Blondie and Dagwood had the same conversation.
Yeah, conversation. Wow. Yeah.
Well,
so Walking Dead. I'm sorry.
No. We can stay on this nerd stuff for a quick moment because our show has struck up a friendship with Michael Giacchino, who is actually from the New Jersey area.
Yep.
And Preston and Nick actually got to go to his home. And Press, you want to describe what his home is like, especially his backyard?
Yeah, I mean, his backyard is made up like a nerd's dream. It essentially, it looks like a mountain range, and he's got, plus he's got a room full of memorabilia like you do as well, and a lot of it comes from some of the Marvel movies and movies that he was involved with, like Planet of the Apes and stuff like that.
Does he have the Ark of the Covenant?
He was having that built. He had the Ark of the Covenant as a bar being built where it would open up and this, you know, the steam would come out of it and everything. So
I think he has a Holy Grail. Literally the Holy Grail from
Crusade.
Last Crusade. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's had wine out of it, you know. So, like, some of these props are practical, and some of them you can actually just, you know, put behind glass forever.
Right.
We all contend that it is a quality of life issue. You have to have these tactile thrills of touching these things that connect you to these moments, these defining moments in your life. And we can segue into The Walking Dead, which has been a pivotal part of the collective pop culture. And of course, you with Talking Dead, when you heard this was the final season coming up, did your head lift off your shoulders, or what was your reaction?
Not really, because I guess I felt like, you know, to be able to do a show, Walking Dead in going into its 11th season and Talking Dead going into its 10th season. So to have been on, I mean, obviously, you know, look, I wish it'd be great if it went on forever, but, you know, it's very rare television air to get to do a show for over a decade, especially now, when shows on streaming services really only go for a couple of seasons, two or three seasons. And so it's like to be upset at all about the opportunity, you know, to have been able to be in this fandom and a part of this insane television phenomenon all these years. I mean, yes, I will be sad. It's also 2 years away, and so I'm able to kind of defer the tears. Like, I can kick it 2 years down the road, because basically there's still 30 episodes left. There's six. They extended season 10 by six episodes, and then season 11 is going to be 24 episodes.
So have there been sort of embryonic suggestions about what the final celebration and wrap-up will be like? Because you know, I mean, we're talking a huge, now mind you, obviously there's the other shows, but you know, that are, and new shows that are coming out in that universe, but this is the first, it's got, you know, to the wire first. And, have you heard about anything, any plans? 'Cause the celebrity fan base that's available to be part of this celebration is voluminous.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't heard anything just yet. I found out the night before the world found out.
Oh, okay.
You know, like, it's like I had like 12 hours, you know, I got a 12 hour head start on everyone. That was about it. And so, I think they're still, again, it's still so far away.
Right.
I think they're just so focused right now. I believe they've just started filming, or they're about to start filming. And so obviously they're taking all the necessary precautions, and so they're just really focused on that right now. And yeah, when the time comes, it'll be really sad. I mean, it's so surreal to, you know, have had something that basically is a significant percentage of my life, you know, has been involved with this amazing show. But I've gotten to meet so many amazing people, like, you know, in the fandom and, you know, connect with people. I mean, I remember I was in Northern California the year. This was the big cliffhanger summer when, you know, Negan had the bat and you didn't know.
Yeah, who, my God.
You know.
Dude, that haunted my days, by the way, because it ended with him clubbing somebody over the head and then it cuts to black or whatever. And I had thought about that scene for days, if not weeks afterwards. I mean, that is how much that I have gotten into this show.
Well, and so, you know, there were some people who were really upset about that because they're like, oh, that, you know, they should have shown it. Why did they, you know, why did they do the cliffhanger? But from my point of view, that whole summer, I had all these amazing conversations. It's all anyone talked to me about right. that summer. And I got to meet so many great people. And we had this fun connection point. I was walking. I was shooting something in Northern California. And I was in this small town. And I was walking across the street. And there was this older gentleman across the street, a barber. He had a barber shop. And he was just standing outside, this little old guy. And it never, you know, I never would have occurred to me, like, hey, stop and talk to this guy about The Walking Dead. But as I was passing, I just heard him shout, I think it's Glenn! It was just this great moment, and it really made me appreciate, like, you know, fandom is about community, and it's about finding these connection points and kind of having this you know, this sort of, these inside jokes and this sort of inside conversation. And so, yeah, it's been really phenomenal. And to watch people, you know, grow on the show
right.
and go off and do amazing things, you know, like the first time I saw Danai on screen in Black Panther was like, oh, my God, she's a movie star. Like, you know,
yeah. So
to get to watch people flourish and you know, and get sort of become a part of the pop culture conversation and, you know, become stars. I don't know. It's just, it's really, I love that stuff.
Well,
it's so much fun to watch.
It's almost so, it moves ever forward. Obviously, we have Fear the Walking Dead. There is the Walking Dead World Beyond, which is another series apparently in the works. And then there is talk of some sort of Daryl and Carol spinoff. Have you heard anything about that?
I don't have a lot of details on it. I just know that they're happening.
Okay.
There's a, you know, yes. There's a lot of Walking Dead stuff in the future. There's the Daryl and Carol spinoff, and then there's the anthology series Tales from the Walking Dead, which I think is going to encompass any and everything in the not only in the existing Walking Dead universe, but also like anything sort of in the apocalypse
okay.
as well.
So, all right,
new stories. I think yeah. So. New stories and old stories, and so, but I don't have any more details beyond that.
All
and
right.
then, yes, World Beyond starts. Fear is still on, and then this movie that is still, you know, in development.
You know what, Chris? We've seen so many series, big ones, the ones that last years, and they come to the end. The story arc comes to an end, and it seems more often than not, people seem to be disappointed with how things wrap up. And I'm talking about things like Lost and Game of Thrones and so on, which I didn't mind those at all. But you got an overwhelming opinion from the public that seemed to be dissatisfied. Walking Dead seems like it will be a very hard thing to make people happy and wrap up with. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, listen, my thought in fandom is that, you know, all opinions are valid. You know, like if you have an experience with a show and you like it or you don't like it, then for you, that's fair. You know, like that you get to have that. And that's part of fandom. I can't imagine what it would be like to create a massive show and then have to like land it.
No, yeah. I would commit. I would kill myself.
Yeah.
The overall stress of delivering, especially with this history, Chris, of failures, and there's a scant few that have seemed to elude that, like Breaking Bad and a few others.
That's an AMC show as
right,
well.
Right, right, right. Yeah. But this group that's involved with this series is so competent, I think they can pull it off.
Well, and yeah, and look, the thing is, you know, I don't know how, I certainly don't know how I would do it. Breaking Bad landed like just beautifully. It was only five seasons. There was a very clear, you know, Walter had a very clear A to B arc in that show. And so, like, once everything kind of unfolded, it was really just about, he kind of just, because he knew he was going to, I guess it's okay to spoil that, right?
If you yes! Yeah, at this point, yeah, probably, yeah.
Yeah, it's probably on you. Maybe it wasn't a priority. You knew he was going to die, so
yeah.
it wrapped up so beautifully that they tied all the loose ends, you know. But there are a lot of characters in a show like Walking Dead. There's a lot of stuff that's happened, and so, you know, and obviously it's diverted from the comics so much, so it's not, I could picture ways maybe that they could kind of tie together, but I just don't know. It will be a Herculean effort to land the show. Some people will love it and some people won't, and that's fair, you know, like that's fandom.
And who knows? I mean, because even if they were able to find an end to this, you know, the dead rising and all, and that's over with, the problems are still just beginning, because then you need to reform the world after that.
Right, right.
It could lead into a whole other...
As long as it's not a kid looking into a snow globe.
Right.
Yeah, I'll be happy.
I don't know if all your listeners know what that is, but that's a reference to the end of St. Elsewhere, which was the medical drama. And, you know, if you really go deep on the snow globe theory, because that show had crossovers, that means that all of these other shows happened inside the snow globe.
Yeah.
Because there were all these crossovers. So if you read about it, it's like that fan theory goes super deep. And I with Walking Dead, I had this theory early on that Breaking Bad was the prequel to Walking Dead.
Ooh.
Because in season two, just as sort of like a prop master nod, the prop guys had blue meth in, like, Merle had a saddlebag or something, and there was blue meth in it. And so if you follow the timelines of when Breaking Bad happened, I think was around, like, 2007 or
right,
so.
Right, right, yeah.
And Walking Dead also started, you know, like, a little bit after that, that I had the theory that the zombie apocalypse actually started because when Walter White died, they tried to recreate his meth and they made some horrible error.
God, I love it, Chris. That would be so...
It created zombies.
I'm down with that.
I'm down with that. By the way, Breaking Bad is my now go-to-bed show. That's the one that I just put on as I fall asleep. And
light television
here. Yeah, just like, well, because I've seen it so many times, I can, you know, it's either that or like I go to bed to Endgame every night. But the episode where he blows up Tuco's office just aired, and it's so funny because if you watch it, there's this huge explosion, right? And the explosion, it takes like a good 10 seconds for, you know, start to finish for everything. But at the very end of the explosion, they put in Howard Dean's scream from when...
Seriously?
Yes. Yes. And I had to rewind it. I'm like, is that Howard? And sure enough, it is Howard...
That show is the magic of Breaking Bad, and I've never really seen another show pull it off this way, but every episode is like the most stressful math problem because something happens in most of the episodes and you're like, there's no way they're going to get out of this.
Yeah.
And not only do they get out of it, you know, like the episode with the magnets and the van next to the thing, it's like, not only do they get out of it, but they get out of it in a way that somehow is both outlandish and grounded at the same time. And you go, that is the only way they could ever get out of that.
Yeah.
And it makes sense. So,
it's,
you know,
it's amazing when stuff like that is done. And this makes me think of a show, and I know you have to be watching it, but are you watching The Boys?
Oh, absolutely. And I think The Boys is probably the closest analogy that television today has to Breaking Bad, because it's the same kind of thing where it's this sort of like wild premise, you know, because Walter White was kind of a dark, you know, it was almost like a comic book, that show, you know, like a math teacher becomes like this meth king, or a science teacher becomes this meth king. But The Boys is the same kind of thing. Like, it's about superheroes, but it's not at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And every episode, I mean, just this one, I don't want to spoil, but the thing that happens in the first episode, when Huey is standing on the street
with
his girlfriend and then A-Train, you know.
Yep.
And so it that's the first moment you're like, oh, holy crap.
Yeah, totally.
And it never stops.
Yep.
Every episode has some moment. Stops. Yes.
Yeah.
And for a show to do that all the time, and Chris, you'll agree with this, when you watch it, you can never be confident that characters that you've grown to enjoy are going to be around until the end of the episode. Everything is up for grabs all the time.
Yeah, it's really, and you know, we go really granular with it too. The guy who created the show, Eric Kripke, created Supernatural, and I've known Eric for 25 years, and so I will email him these kind of like, you know, these kind of questions and comments about the show where I basically like push up my glasses at the end. I'm like, I noticed there's a recurring Billy Joel theme this season. Why Huey was wearing a T-shirt from the album cover The Stranger, you know? It's like
The character Stormfront is the name of a Billy Joel album. Thank you very much.
So, oh, my gosh. Oh, you guys. Oh.
Yeah, see, you did it.
Are we going to see you in an episode since you know this dude?
Ooh, that's a good, you know, I know they're doing a season three, so maybe I'll, I'm friends with a lot of writers and directors, and there are a lot of things that I secretly am like, God, I really wish I could just be in that for a minute, but you don't want to be the guy that's like, can I be in your television show?
I'm a huge Supernatural fan, and so let us try to get that information to Eric, and we'll suggest it for you, because, it's a joy to watch television like that, to watch a show like that that just resets everything, and it shows you there's always wiggle room within a tried and true concept where they can find different things to do. And that's, you know, that's the joy of what you do pop culture wise and everything else. I have to ask you quickly with the G4 the network reboot, which I understand is going to happen, are you going to be a part of that?
I don't know. I mean, but I don't know what I can say and can't say.
I'm going to take that as a yes.
Well, I don't know.
Okay.
The thing is, we've had conversations about it. I don't know. You know, listen, G4 was like, you know, it's funny because people come up to me like when I do stand-up shows, even when I was in your town, which didn't seem like that long ago, but
yeah,
it was January 30th. You know, people come up and they go, man, I used to watch you in the old days back on G4. And then secretly inside, I'm like, God, they don't even realize that there are much older days for me on MTV. Like, so I feel ancient. So I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, a younger generation of nerds should I take the helm. I just don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm being evasive about it because I honestly don't know.
All right.
Maybe it would be like, I don't know, maybe I could pitch shows and develop things, you know. But I was the tech guy on G4, and then I hosted Web Soup, which was a spinoff of The Soup. And so, you know, I found that I'm not as super techie as I used to be, you know,
which is
what happens when people get older. But, you know, we turn into the blinking 12 o'clock on the VCR.
Right. Yes. You've got your grand pad and you're all set.
Chris, I wanted to ask about another show that I thought ranks up there with The Boys, which is Umbrella Academy. And number one, I assume you watched all of that.
You know, we haven't watched Umbrella Academy, but it's not because we don't want to, because I know that's Gerard's show, and I hear it's great. The problem that we face is that there is so much.
Yeah.
I mean,
quality.
I don't know how anybody could keep up with anything that's out there now. Okay. You know, like, we're watching The Boys, we're watching this show Raised by Wolves on HBO Max, which is really fun. It's this kind of dystopian sci-fi show that's really great. And it's a Ridley Scott produced show.
Yes, I've heard great things about it. But you're right, we've had this conversation. You used to be able to say, hey, you got to watch this. And I no longer say that because there's just too much to watch.
Well, and I think we'll just get there. You know, we'll get there. And so we have Umbrella Academy saved right now. So it's on our list. But my question for y'all, especially like in reference to a show like The Boys, where do you fall on binge watching versus like week to week?
I'll give you my take. I've come to appreciate week to week. Now, if I go back, the Walking Dead, I waited out. I didn't get started till like after six seasons of it aired, and then I used it as kind of a. And I did the same thing with Breaking Bad. It came and went, and then I went and I binged the whole thing, and I did appreciate that. But as shows are rolling out and they're new, I want to get some time to think about these. So I appreciate the once a week viewing. I'll even take it a step further. Sometimes I'll just watch half of a show, and then in the beginning of the week, and then watch the other half of it in a couple of days. So then I don't have to wait that much longer for the new episode to come out. So.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, that's kind of where I don't hate it. And I know people with The Boys, they weren't happy because season one came out en masse.
They freaked. They were actually giving bad reviews online
and this
out
time
of
around,
anger.
Out
yeah.
of the gate, they gave the three episodes, and then people didn't like that. But I think with a little time, you tend to appreciate it more. But that's my personal take.
I personally do, too. Well, I think shows are sort of like cuisine, right? It's like some shows are like fast food. You want to just gobble them all at once. And then other shows are just these, like, incredibly sumptuous meals that you want to enjoy. And with a show like The Boys or Walking Dead or Breaking Bad, you know, shows like that, I feel like you need time to digest everything that happens.
Right.
I do. And I also love I think it's better for the show to give people more room to, like, talk about it and live with it and ask questions. Because when you binge watch something, you kind of never think about it again. You watch it in like on a Saturday or Sunday, and then Monday, you know, you can't remember what day it was. You just watched, you know, everything at once. But yeah, so I love like, and also like my wife and I know that, you know, because it technically comes out Friday, but it's Thursday at midnight.
Yes.
On the West Coast, it's like, you know, 8 or 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
So every Thursday night, like my wife and I have this show that we love to watch together. And so it's kind of nice to have this appointment for a thing. So
I agree.
That's how we enjoy the fandom.
There's other shows that are like 30-minute ones, like Cobra Kai, that were like candy. And I was just like, I can't stop. I've just got to keep watching this.
You know, I love that show because... and I had Billy Zabka and Ralph Macchio on the podcast a little while back, and I said the thing that it was so amazing about the show is that it easily could have been a lazy interpretation of like, okay, let's recreate the dynamic we had in the movie, and we'll just go for the nostalgia points, the South Park member berries, and they didn't.
No.
The fact that they took this whole other like. Turn and you start to get a little sympathetic to Johnny Lawrence, and you kind of see Daniel is like, oh, he's a little bit of an arrogant jerk, you know?
Yeah.
And even that scene in the beginning of the series where he's like, he used to beat me up all the time. He's like, you stole my girlfriend.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh yeah, that's right.
You never thought about that in the movie, and that's we had him on and Zabka, and we said. When it was initially marketed on YouTube, the impression we got is it's a parody. It's going to be a parody series, and they marketed it the wrong way. It's a lot more substantive.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it also just really addresses this interesting idea of sort of what it means to be a middle-aged adult, like how over all your high school stuff are you, and how, you know, like how those kind of like, little grudges that you held, you know, for especially like, listen, especially if you're a nerdy kid and you got, you know, and people were not nice to you or whatever, like how long do you carry that stuff around? And you see grown people acting like kids again, you know, and you realize like, oh yeah, you know, like people carry stuff around. It's just such an interesting, it's an interesting commentary on, you know, like adult humans at the same time.
On real life, like, do you ever really truly graduate high school? You know, that's what I carried from that show. Nick, did you have a question about Cobra Kai? Because I was going to ask about something else.
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
So I wanted to move on to Marvel real quick because
By the way, let me reset. We've been talking for a half hour, and I haven't even said that this is, if you're just tuning in, it's Chris Hardwick that we're talking to.
All right, so Gamora was cherry-picked from a previous timeline, so she's going to live on. And I wanted to ask if you thought that perhaps they can cherry-pick Tony Stark from another timeline.
I mean, it's certainly, I think anything is possible. I don't know. I mean, you know, if you're saying, like, you know, can someone else step into the Stark? I mean, it's just, it's so Robert Downey Jr. Like,
yes.
Such a, but again, you know, look, you know, as time passes on and people get older and, you know, younger people grow up, you know, it's like you want to give them new things. Did anyone think that anyone could ever play, you know, McCoy, Spock, Kirk again? And yet there were a couple movies where they did.
Yeah, they did, yeah.
They did well.
You know, it's like, and it did well and it worked. And so the answer is, yeah, it's possible. You know, I'm sure people of our generation will be like mumbly about it, like, brr, brr. you're Tony Stark's not my Tony Stark, you damn kids. Get off my lawn, you know. But I think, you know, anything's possible. And that's sort of what comic book movies, I mean, like, comic books in general, you know, like, do that with authors and artists and their different runs on things and different takes on things and alternate universes of things, and they evolve and they change. And so that's just sort of the nature of it. So, I mean, I don't think it's going to be something that happens anytime soon, but
no.
But way, 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 way down the road. And I know they did it, like, really quickly with the Spider-Man cinema series. You know, but I think, you know, from Tobey Maguire to Andrew Garfield, I think that had something, if I'm wrong about this, I apologize. I'm sure the internet knows better than I do, but I believe, because, you know, after the third Spider-Man movie came out, it wasn't too long after that they announced the Amazing Spider-Man. You're like, wow, really already? But I think that had something to do with, like, legal rights. You know, like, usually in the entertainment business, when you go, why would they do this? It's either money or, like, lawyers.
Yeah.
So I think it had something to do with the fact of, like, Sony needed to, they had to literally make an origin story again to retain the rights.
Okay.
For Spider-Man, so they didn't revert. So it was something like that. So then there are all those other reasons too that, you know, are that you don't know about.
Well, speaking of the entertainment industry and getting back to binging real quick, the way that we consume television and movies has changed a lot over the last 5 years, right? That kind of goes without saying. But do you think that, because I was thinking about, like, The Office and Parks and Rec, which people are binging now, but when those shows came out, there were 20 to 30 episodes per season. Do you think the way in which these shows now are made, they're designed to be binged, or does it depend on the show to, you know, from show to show?
I think it depends on the show. And I don't know. Someone who worked at a streaming company explained to me, and it actually really depressed me, because they were, you know, the way that we grew up is that, listen, if a show is a hit, it runs as long as possible, you know, and Walking Dead may be one of the last shows for a while to really be able to do this, you know, because I think since a lot of things are going to streaming and subscription models, a subscription model is different than, like, a television ad revenue model, because streamers, like, once you join a streaming service, they consider you a volatile consumer in the sense that at any month you could just bounce.
Right? Yes. You know? Yeah.
And so they will do whatever they can to kind of keep you from unsubscribing, because if you subscribe for 18 months, then statistically you'll never unsubscribe, because it's just become a part of your, like, financial ecosystem and you don't think about it anymore. And so, but I think what they find is that there's no real, like, doing a third and fourth season of a show doesn't retain or get new subscribers. And so they're just not as incentivized to, you know, to do it. Obviously there are exceptions, you know, like Stranger Things, which is really huge, but in general, you know, we might kind of be seeing the death of, like, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12 seasons of shows outside of network television, because, and now that everything's kind of, like, merging, I don't know. You know, I think
you're right.
A very strange time.
I think you're right. I think just in the way, at least for a while, for the foreseeable future, you know, the 32 episode season is not going to happen.
God, you know, I was thinking about this the other day that the lottery of all lotteries was to be on a successful sitcom in the 90s.
Yeah.
Because the 90s was still when television people were getting crap tons of money, right? It was like television was still, you know, it was still big in the traditional sense, like traditional media sense. So if you were on Seinfeld or Friends, you made a ton of money while you were doing a show. Then the second lottery you won was syndication. Then the third lottery you won was home video and DVD. And then now the fourth lottery is all those people on the streaming services because people just nostalgia binge watch 90s stuff. So it's like, you know, Seinfeld and Friends, and even though The Office was more early 2000s, it's still, those came back around. It's like, here, Seinfeld, have another $500 million.
Yeah. Well, it's multiple trips to the buffet table, you know? Just one question quickly. I know we're starting to wrap up here, but the legend of the Snyder Cut, which everyone said, okay, this will never happen. This will never happen. Here we are, HBO Max sinking millions of dollars into Zack Snyder doing his version, his original vision of the Justice League. Where do you stand on this? I'm a massive fan myself. I love Zack Snyder, and the original version, as I hear it envisioned, is something I am biting at the bit for. What's your take?
I mean, listen, I think any time you get to see it, I don't see it as much different than, you know, when we were growing up and you'd get the Laserdisc Criterion Director's Cut, you know? I mean, it's an opportunity to see a different version and see, you know, whenever you hear, like, because obviously, you know, when movies get made, there's a lot of money on the line. So, you know, studios can get involved. Things can change in ways that, you know, that maybe the directors didn't intend or had to compromise on. And so to be able to see a different spin on something and go, oh, this was actually, you know, apparently his vision. I mean, why not? I say, you know, even though we sort of made jokes about how much content there is, but, you know, the more content, the better. And if it gives us a peek inside of, like, oh, this is what I intended to make, you know, it sparks more conversation. It sparks more community. It sparks more people saying, I love this. It sparks more people saying, I didn't love this, you know? And so it just kind of fuels our fandom, which is really fun. And, you know, that's kind of wrapping it up and kind of going back to the G4 question, which I'll try to express a little more clearly. I have spoken to them quite a few times, and I'm excited that they're doing it because that, you know, G4 to me was just a celebration of all things fandom, you know, like movies and television and tech. And it was really the first thing on a traditional broadcaster that celebrated all of the things that when I was growing up, you weren't super open about because you didn't want people to make fun of you. And so to celebrate all of these things, you know, whatever happens with G4, I'm excited. And so, you know, if I do something on it, that'll be great. And if I just watch as a fan, that'll be great. Or if I get to make shows for it, that'll be great. But, you know, I have had conversations with them, and from what I can tell, what they're planning sounds fun and really exciting. And so, you know.
Yeah, it's from a place of enjoying all this, and that's what we love about you and your take on it is that at its basic visceral level, it's about the sheer joy this stuff brings us.
Yep.
It's entertainment. It should be fun, and sometimes, you know, like, it pisses us off, but you know, but really, it is about entertainment, and to me, it is about community and fandom and the ability that, like, the fact that I can go on a morning radio show and talk for 35 minutes about these things, it just wouldn't have happened 20 years ago.
No, you're right.
So and the fact that they're, you know, I'm sure some people listening turn it off and go, oh, stupid nerds. But a lot of people are listening and it's sparking, like, they're thinking about their favorite Breaking Bad episodes or their experience with Zack Snyder's Director's Cut. And so it really, to me, it's just about celebration and community. And that's why I love it. That's why I love Walking Dead. And I'm so happy to be even an ancillary part of all of it. So,
Chris, yeah. It's not just people listening have tuned out. Kathy Romano sitting in here in our studio right now. She has not been listening this entire time.
What nerds.
Yeah. So
Kathy's a huge fan of the Joss Whedon cut.
Yeah, she's very. She didn't want to jump in. Well, listen, Chris, we'll just point people in the direction. Walking Dead, 10 o'clock Sunday. I'm sorry, season 10 finale Sunday 9. And then, of course, Talking Dead on at 10 after that. But
oh, and The Wall got picked
the
up.
Wall. The Wall! Congratulations!
Yeah, that's huge. Nice. Yeah, all right. So listen, we love talking to you. We could have you on every week if that were possible, but hopefully we'll be chatting again sometime in the near future. All
I
right,
hope
bud?
So. All right, excellent. You guys take care. It's so good to hear your voices. And, excellent. I hope to talk to you soon.
Appreciate it. Chris Hardwick, yeah! Guys. I could go on and on and on.
It's great. I mean, and the fear that you have, you talk about fear of The Walking Dead, fear of just driving people nuts with this stuff, because it is, we've always, from the beginning of our show, have been fanboys for so much of this stuff.
Yeah.
And when you get someone, and he's connected through to a lot of these people who are making these things that we love.
I never did watch G4.
I loved it. And God, so did I love it.
It's movies and tech and games and
everything.
All that stuff, right?
Yeah, okay. Kevin Pereira and Olivia Munn and all the others, they had a really great sensibility.
More podcasts from Preston and Steve available at PrestonandSteve.com.